You're listening to the Mindful Psychology Podcast, a podcast designed to explore mindfulness, psychology, neuroscience, and various aspects of holistic health. My name is Jen. I'm your host. I'm also a therapist, an educator, and a yoga teacher. Join me and brilliant guests as we explore various topics and offer you actionable steps so that you can be informed and intentional about your health and well-being. Now sit back, relax, maybe take a notebook out, and let's dive in. Hi everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Mindful Psychology Podcast. My name is Jen, I am your host, and today we are joined by the lovely Karen Johnston. Karen is a psychotherapist, she's also a clinical aromatherapist, a health coach, and she's certified in Ayurveda. What I love about my chat with Karen is that she had such a great way of combining her training in clinical therapy and in social work with these different holistic modalities, really teaching us how to go beyond and simply easing the symptoms and really offering a holistic approach to healing and to overall health and well-being. But I won't chat to you about that. I'll let Karen do all the work and offer you all the insight. So without further ado, here is Karen. Hi, Karen. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jen? Nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you too. Where are you joining us from today?
Today I'm in Massachusetts, kind of in the middle of Massachusetts, about 40 minutes west of Boston.
Okay, cool. Yes. Awesome. So I'm really excited to have you on the show today, and we've been planning this for quite some time. So why don't you tell everybody about yourself, about the work that you do, how you got into the work that you do, and all of that fun stuff.
Great. Oh, awesome. I'm so happy to be here as well. And I thank you for chatting with me for this time. So I'm a holistic psychotherapist and holistic wellness coach. And I've been seeing people in private practice for about 25 years. And in the last year or so, I decided to also offer services online. So I coach people online and I offer online programs to help people with stress and anxiety. Because I do think that reaching as many people as possible, especially now during this global pandemic, matters. So I got on the train and I put my myself to work, and I was able to create programs to help people manage stress and anxiety during this time. But so I'm trained in psychology, social work. I have graduate degrees in those things. I would say that that's like my traditional background. But then over the course of my life, what happened is I was very interested in holistic modalities. So I went down and, became an Ayurvedic lifestyle instructor. So that means that I can use Ayurveda in my services. So I kind of weave Ayurveda into the services that I offer my clients. As well, I became a certified clinical aromatherapist because I just fell in love with the powers of what essential oils can do to boost our mood all naturally. So I really feel like the marriage of traditional sort of like psychology as well married with holistic modalities just brings on not only a sound approach, but a more healing approach, I would say, because I feel like it goes a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like the holistic goes deeper?
I feel like it does. I can say that a lot of people that come to me in private practice, a lot of them are on like these psychopharmacological medications, which are like heavy duty medications. But what they actually need more is a little bit of guidance. Many people who come to see me in my private practice are on what's called psychopharmacological medication, which are like psychiatric medicines. And they're heavy duty medicines. And what I find is that for a lot of them, what they would benefit most is not from medication, but from a lifestyle change. So I use holistic modalities to help people create a more balanced lifestyle so that they no longer need to be on these heavy duty medicines, which are to me needed for some people for a certain amount of time. But for most people, they're not needed forever. Like really what people can benefit from is from a lifestyle change. And I do feel like the holistic modalities can really teach people how to do that.
Really? Okay. So do you find, like, if you look at your studies or your more traditional background, let's say, we'll call it that for the sake of the episode, would you find that were there ever times when you were studying those things that you felt like there was more or like there was something perhaps missing?
Absolutely. For
Really?
me, absolutely. Yeah. I grew up in a family where my mom always favored a natural approach to treating anything, whether it was a boo-boo, or she wanted to lose some weight. Like, she always looked to natural approaches to heal things. And so when I was in my studies, I knew that natural approaches worked, but it wasn't taught at all in my traditional counseling education. Natural approaches were just not touched upon at all. And so I knew that for me, after I did grad school, I wanted to continue learning more about natural remedies because I grew up around them, and I just wanted to bring that to my patients and my clients.
Wow. So you
So it was
actually feel
important.
like most of the time it's not even clinical help that they need, but actually a lifestyle change.
Yes, I would say yes. For many of them, yes, absolutely. Although the clinical piece, how can I say this? Like, that's the foundation and it is necessary. But then once that framework is worked through and I can get people to sort of like psychologically a good thinking space,
Okay, yeah, that
then
makes sense.
using holistic modalities is where we go.
Okay, no, that makes perfect sense, I think. So like the foundation, we have to set them up in a way that is necessary for them, be it medically or whatever. And then after that, when they get into the headspace, the lifestyle adaptation is more within the holistic realm.
Correct.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And what brought you to Massachusetts then? So you studied all these things, study everything in Boston, were you?
No, I studied them at McGill in McGill University in Montreal, as well as Université de Montréal, which is University of Montreal. That's where I did my graduate degree. What brought me to the US is what right after grad school, I was working at a CLSC, which is like a community center, and I was doing a job that to me was soul draining. I really wasn't happy because from a young age, I knew that I wanted to help people one-on-one in an office. So I wanted to be a psychotherapist. I knew that right away that was my calling. That's what I wanted to do. But the certification or licensing body in Canada where I was would not allow me to become a therapist right away. I was told that I would need to do 10 years of this other job that I was doing first before I could even apply for a license. And like I said, it was soul draining. It was exhausting. I was not happy at all. And so I knew that in the United States, at least in Massachusetts, you could become a therapist even if you were a recent graduate. So it's not like right out of grad school you can become a therapist. The process is about 2 years. But at that point, I had enough experience to apply for the license. And so I decided, let's just apply for a few jobs and see what happens. And I got a few jobs, was able to make a decision as to which one I wanted to take, and was able to right away start working as a therapist in the United States pretty recent after doing grad school. And I knew that that was my calling, and I've never looked back. This is really what I want to do.
Well, and it made sense for you. And so for anybody who might not know, what is the difference between social work and psychology? So you graduated in both, you said, yeah? Like you've studied
Yes.
both.
I did my undergrad in psychology and my graduate program in social work. For me, to do a graduate program in psychology, you have to choose between one of two tracks. The first is clinical, and the second is research. Clinical is more of the sort of applied behavioral therapy where you can give psychological tests to people. So it's kind of like very scientific. Even though it's clinical, it's just very scientific. And the research is doing research on social behavior, drug interactions, and those kinds of things. So both those tracks didn't quite fit with me. So I looked into social work because in social work, there's more of a community approach as well. There's more of a holistic approach in social work where we look at the person, what's called the biopsychosocial perspective. So we see the person even more holistically. So that appealed to me very much more than just the traditional psychology tracks of grad school.
What's a normal day in the life of a, or I don't even know if that question works here, but what was a normal day, an average day for you as a social worker when you're at the CLSC?
Putting out fires. So I was working with the frail elderly, and so I would get calls all day from them. I had to like solve all of their issues. Like when they would drop their dentures in the toilet bowl, I was the go-to person for them. To go and pick up the dentures out of the toilet bowl, or if they were worried that they didn't turn off the stove, I was the one that they would run to. I became this go-to person for everything, and that was just overwhelming. The actual job title was case manager, but I found that I was becoming their everything. Mm-hmm. Like they would look to me more so than they would look to their own family to solve their issues. And that's what was encouraged. And I just didn't like that approach. It was a burnout job. It just was not a happiness fulfilling job.
Whereas for you, you really wanted to go more into psychotherapy and actually be therapying people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I wanted to see people who, like one-on-one, who would have together we would work out a plan and they would work towards the sort of like life goals.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how did that flourish for you in Boston when you finally moved to Massachusetts? Sorry.
Yeah. So how did it flourish? That's a good question. I worked for a clinic for several years till I got my license, and within a few years started seeing people one-on-one in private practice. There was this wonderful doctor that I had met who was a holistic doctor who gave me the opportunity to use his office to see people one-on-one, sort of after my day job kind of thing. So that's how I got started. And within a few years after that, I opened up my own private practice, and that's what I've been doing ever since. It's never really changed. I've always been in private practice soon after coming to the US.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's great. And yeah. and the holistic weaving in that you talked about, was that kind of pretty much from the get-go for you?
For me, it was, yes. And thankfully, it was allowed. Like when I worked at the clinic, it was allowed. I was able to weave in these things. They were very open to it.
Yeah. Right. And so you talked about why you were interested in this, because you were always surrounded by this growing up and all of that stuff. And then you talked about the different things that you did. You talked about Ayurveda a little bit and the clinical aromatherapy. So what are some examples in which you've applied Ayurvedic medicine and aromatherapy in your work with your clients?
Ayurveda is really interesting. It's actually the oldest medical system in the world, and all other medical systems stem from it. So again, it's even traditional Chinese medicine, which we sometimes have heard of, stems from Ayurveda. So it's kind of like the first organized medical system, and it really is based on nature, rebalancing us through lifestyle, through nature, attuning ourselves with nature's patterns. It looks at diet, herbs, but really routines and lifestyles. So how I use Ayurveda is there's this quiz that people can take to figure out what their own personal mind body type is, or what's called a dosha. We all have a dosha. It's kind of like assigned to us at conception based on what nature elements were available at the time of our conception. So some of us can be what's called Vata or Pitta or Kapha. So, you know, people will take this test, and then I can figure out if they're Vata, depending on their mind body type. I can tailor a little bit their treatment plan, let's say, based on what mind body type that they have. So that's how I incorporate that. And so, like, for instance, different activities are best suited for different mind body types. Different diets are best suited for different mind body types. So it's not
one size fits all. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
exactly. It's not one size fits all. Yeah, it's really individual.
About this as well, right?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And how would you? And so I guess I kind of have two questions. So you talk about being a psychotherapist. I know well. Wellness coach, where do those two practices differ, first of all, would be my question.
So I would say that the psychotherapy part is governed by a license, whereas the wellness coach part, not as much. It just means that in the work that I do as a therapist, there is this over arching body that regulates or can check in with what I do to make sure that I do no harm. And I do think that that is necessary, that there is a sort of like other party that can come in from time to time, not to dictate what I'm doing, but that kind of checks if I'm upholding all the conditions that I'm supposed to uphold to. Like, I have a code of ethics, I have laws and rules to abide by, to just ensure that I do no harm with my clients. And for me, starting with that was just a easy transition to do coaching, because I still have that foundation where,
yes,
I have that mentality of doing no harm. Mm-hmm. So I was able to transition easily into coaching, where I don't have a regulatory body necessarily, but I kind of do too, because I'm certified in different things. And there are bodies that oversee me a little bit, but it's not a license. They're just certifications, which they're not as governed in the same way. Like, it's just not as stringent, I would say.
Sure. But yeah, then the universal thing that goes around your work is that you do no harm. And that, yeah, at the end of the day, there is a body that regulates and that kind of keeps you in check in case. You
know? Sure.
Not in case, but you know what I mean? Like, there's this regulatory body, and then from there you can be more creative. And I'm actually stealing, yes, your words here, because you talked about how the foundation is so important, and that, yes, then from that foundation you have the flexibility to be more creative with what you offer, which I would assume, absolutely, the creativity that you've found is the coaching, is the clinical aroma,
yes,
is the Ayurveda. So, yes, what do you think, are there any practices right now in all of your experience that you've noticed in the world that are a little bit troubling to you or unsettling in terms of the lack of licensing?
I guess it would be the general word of coach. A lot of people are saying, I'm a this kind of coach, I'm a that kind of coach. Like, anyone can call themselves a coach. It's not a regulated term. Often you'll find that coaches use their experience to sort of dictate the strategies that they use, but they're not governed by any sort of body overseeing their work. And so I'm not sure that they would uphold the same do no harm mentality that people who are governed by a licensing board or certification board would. Sometimes it scares me a little bit when I see coaches, but it's just based on their experience, especially coaches who call themselves mental health coaches. I do see that. And they're not trained at all in the mental psychological field. And so we got to understand that as healers in the psychology field, our words have so much impact on people, and it's easy, or our words can easily do harm.
Yes.
And that's why the licensing boards are important. That way it holds us accountable. And if we do inadvertently happen to harm a client, then they can hold us accountable. The client has an avenue to sort of like correct things and sure, make sure that we don't repeat that mistake, for instance. Whereas people who call themselves mental health coach, there's just nobody looking out for if they're doing harm or not harm. And I do think that that's probably something that is scary to me. To answer your question, that would be it, is when people call themselves mental health coaches without the proper training background. Like, even though they have experience, say, in treating their depression or their anxiety, their experience is very worthy. But when you go and help other people, I think training is necessary.
I agree. Yeah. And even just different kinds, right? Like, for anybody listening, it's not that you have to do all the studying that Karen did, because you've been studying and you've gone. Listen, I mean, I'm not saying anything about the Montreal thing, but I'm from Montreal too. I know McGill. Yeah.
Yes. I know McGill. It's an awesome training that we got, I think.
It's like, McGill's great. And in regard, I mean, so is U of M. I mean, you know, yeah, they're strong schools, and it's not like we have loads of them in Montreal either.
So. Right.
But seriously, Montreal, McGill is a really strong school. And even aside from the school itself, I mean, you've gone through rigorous training, you've gotten your license, and then you've gone and done other things after that. So you've really been in both worlds. Mm-hmm. So I see what you're saying. You know, you've been, mm-hmm, in both. And I can, yeah, see how sometimes having the experience, you know, they mean well, for sure. They want to, mm-hmm, help everybody.
Yeah.
But you do have to be careful of what it means when you're helping somebody in a fragile state, you know?
Absolutely. And also, I think when a client comes to me, they know what service I'm offering them, because it's clear, they can clearly see whether they go to the licensing board. The licensing board kind of dictates the services that I offer. And so any client can have clarity as to what they're coming to me for. But if you're a coach, a mental health coach, it can be described on the person's website, let's say, what services that they offer, but it might not be really clear to the client or the customer going to see that coach what it is that they're getting. Like, there's just no regulation around that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And with that, I mean, I guess this whole idea of psychology as a science and an art, perhaps we can weave this into the answer, like you can weave this into the answer to this question. But my question would be, if someone's wondering what they're to do at this point, how they can offer help to people, but do it in a legal way or in a accountable way, or if that makes any sense, you know, make sure that they hold themselves accountable or find a way to have some kind of regulating body so that they can, you know, be held accountable in the work that they offer, but they don't necessarily have all the background and the academic side or whatever. What would your advice be? Having been in both worlds, sure. What would your advice be to somebody who's wanting to be a coach or some kind of healer to help people?
Sure. I think one thing would be to have a good check on yourself, like check in with yourself all the time. Like, am I doing any harm? Am I going off on a tangent that doesn't apply to this client? Like, really just like have good self-awareness and checking in with yourself and asking yourself, like, am I doing any harm? Am I helping this person? As well as getting feedback from the person that you're helping. It's good to get their feedback. But also, maybe I was just thinking, participating in some kind of group, like a group of coaches, or kind of like a supervisory peer group where you can bounce your ideas off of others also in the field, just to sort of like get ideas of like, are you on the right track? Are you doing the right thing? Are you making sure you're not hurting anyone? Are you really helping the person? Yeah. So to sort of like not do it alone, obviously check in with yourself, have that good self-awareness, but then ask feedback to the person you're helping and participate in some kind of group where you check in with others.
Yeah. I definitely like that idea well, I like everything that you said, but also being part of the group, making sure that you're following what's going on, staying informed, right?
Yeah.
You understand what you're doing. And if you're not sure about what title to use or what to write in your bio or your website, maybe just research it.
Yeah.
See what's legal in your and where you live, and what's okay, right? What do you think?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Ask around, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the US, it's like every state is different as well, right?
Yes, and the licensing has different little letters too in different states.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think it's always important to know where we're offering what as well, especially with online businesses, right? If you're working with people from all over, just understanding what you're offering. And diving deeper into this idea of psychology as a science and an art, please take us into that whole. Because those are your words, and I love that. So
yeah. Okay. So I think I'm referring to sort of like the path that I took, so I can personalize it a little bit. I really feel like the traditional background or traditional education that I got was very rigorous in the sort of clinical field, which helped me to understand human behavior, human motivation, what drives people. Helped me understand people's like mindsets and that kind of thing. It really was a good foundation to just understand human beings. And then with the holistic modalities, it allowed me to be a little bit creative. So I feel like I have a rigorous foundation, which then allows me to be a bit more creative in the services that I'm able to offer, which are the holistic modalities. I feel like confident that I can use those holistic modalities because I have that strong foundation.
Yeah. I think it also can be tricky, right? When you study a lot of the holistic things, I personally always feel like I'm a little bit like flying in the wind when I'm studying those things, you know, like there are just so many things. And then when I come back to what I know, or I come back to my traditional studies or whatever, I'm like, okay, now I feel a bit more balanced. Like I can
sure
together, you know,
like it's grounding, right? Like the traditional education is grounding
personally, of course. You know, this is a personal thing, I don't know, but I definitely also feel like when I come back to the more traditional things or the more academic I guess, evidence-based, for lack of better words, you know,
yeah.
I come back down to that. I'm like, okay, right, this is my path. And I'm just adding this extra way of making it accessible, right? And that also resonates with. So I like that you do it that way, because it's true that it reminds us, you know, where this all came from and why we're doing what we're doing, right? I personally find, right?
Absolutely.
I like your perspective on it as well. And obviously you have different training than I do, and I don't even have a license, to be honest. So you do. But I love that idea of being creative in what we offer.
I think that the holistic modalities are complementary, but also maybe even necessary, because at least in my experience and in the trainings that I've done and life experience, I've come to know the sort of like traditional medical model as one that reduces symptoms, which is necessary. Like when you have a high fever, or if you have cancer, like that medical model sort of like reduces symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. But in holistic modalities, they seek to treat the root cause of the illness. Not only seek to reduce symptoms, like if you're having anxiety or diarrhea or whatever, they seek to address the root cause. So they actually go a little bit deeper. And the way that they do that is they not only address your physical body, but they address your mental body, your emotional body, and your spiritual body. So they go towards deeper healing, in my opinion, than a traditional model would. So I do think that they're very complementary.
I agree. Yeah. And that's a really good point as well. And I don't know if, yeah, I think there's often this debate between the two rather than like an honoring of how well they can work together. And whilst for some having the balance of both is really important, or having one foundation is really important, I think harnessing both the way you've done and really kind of honing in on your skills the way you've done in a holistic way with that other foundation is what makes it stronger, right? Like, it doesn't limit you. It actually allows you to go much deeper.
At all. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to help people feel better, better.
Cool, right?
Yeah.
And so when you think of the work that you do, like, what do you help clients with most? What is most of the work that you do?
Okay, so in kind of like maybe vague-ish terms, what I help people do is perpetually renew and protect their vital energy. So what that means is that at the source of any stress condition, which is what I deal with a lot, is the depletion of vital energy. Now, I experienced that myself when I did burn out earlier on in my career. I actually was a non-functioning human for almost a year because I burnt out. And I remember seeing a doctor at that time, and he told me that my vital energy was depleted. And I said, what is that? So it kind of started me even more on this journey of finding out what holistic modalities were and what they could do for me, because they address vital energy. And so vital energy is connected through our breath, but it's not actually our breath. And it runs along these channels, these energy channels that we have in our body called either nadis in Ayurveda or meridian lines in traditional Chinese medicine. And so by practicing holistic modalities, we increase this vital energy, and it protects us from experiencing things like anxiety, stress, depression, burnout, emotionally unwell, emotionally unbalanced. And so most of the people that come to see me in my office are coming to me for help with anxiety, stress, and depression. That would be the people that I help the most with.
Mm-hmm.
At least one-on-one. Those are the kinds of people that come to me. And I did, along the way, develop this signature program, which is a 4 layers of life framework. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I teach in my online courses. So, and it's really complementary to having a one-on-one approach.
Mm-hmm.
And doing these online courses, they work very, very well, because it's kind of like jam packing into a program how to perpetually renew and protect your vital energy, so that you protect yourself from experiencing stress conditions, anxiety, and depression. So they work very well together.
That's incredible. That's really interesting. And then you have these one-on-one and you have this program, and what else do you have going on?
Okay, so the my signature program is called the Happy Holistic Self-Care Project, and it's a stress-reducing lifestyle, or how to create a stress-reducing lifestyle in 28 days. Again, so you learn to perpetually renew your vital energy. So you know what to do to like protect yourself from feeling anxiety and depression when life throws curveballs at, when life throws curveballs at you. You know, life is stressful. It just is. But like stress is a natural response to a threat. Anxiety is not a natural response. It's how we respond to stress. And anxiety is actually our maladaptive response to stress. So that's what we have to address, is we have to kind of rework how we respond to stress. Because anxiety left unchecked actually rewires the brain towards favoring the stress response versus the relaxation response. Mm. And if we're constantly triggering the stress response, then we're constantly in a fight or flight mode, which is like the body excretes adrenaline and cortisol. And that's where we feel like our breath is out of, our breathing is fast, our shallow breathing, our heart rate increases, our blood pressure increases. So what we experience as a stress response, and if it happens over and over again, it turns into anxiety kind of thing. So if we actually work and use holistic modalities to induce the relaxation response instead of the stress response, it reprograms the brain over time to induce the relaxation response. So it's kind of like you're retraining your brain towards the relaxation response instead of the stress response. So anyway, I show that in that program, as well as a new program that I have coming out, I think in September or October. It's called the Stressless Joy Multiplier. It's a two-step program and it's a low-cost program. I want to make this one available to everybody. In the first step of the program is meditations. You'll get 9 different kinds of meditations to figure out what your meditation style is, because a lot of people don't know that there are different kinds of meditations. So they might have tried one style of meditation or another and said, you know what, it doesn't work for me. I keep thinking during meditation. So in this program, you'll be able to sample and try a total of 9 different meditations over the course of 11 meditations. Oh, and there's a special meditation to strengthen your lungs, especially good now during the pandemic, because it's going to strengthen your lungs and help you fight also the flu season. So that's a very special one that I've included in there. Anyway, so that's step number one. Step number two of this little program is it's called the Stressless 365 calendar. And it's a calendar that syncs to your own Google Calendar. And it's really unlike anything else that I've seen on the market today. But for 1 year, you're going to get every day for 1 year, you're going to get stress reducing tips and activities and mindset training throughout the course of a year. So in 1 year, we'll have looked at the body, the mind, the heart, and the soul. And so after a year of doing these things or trying these tips, you'll have begun living a more holistic way of life. But it's really quick. Like sometimes it's just about reading a certain phrase that plants a seed in your mind to sort of like correct a mindset. So it's not like, oh my God, every day I'm going to have to be doing something. You can pick and choose what you want to do or not, but know that you're going to have access to at least 365 ideas. And in that program, there's also a bunch of bonuses. There's 6 bonuses, really awesome bonuses. I can't think of them now. One of them is the top 10 mindset shifts to adopt to live a more stress-free life. Yeah, that's one of them.
That's amazing. I think.
Yeah. Anyway,
bonuses.
We can go on and on for that.
I was already sold at the, you know. <It's> amazing. I actually wanted to mention one thing though. So you said that sometimes in time we learn to favor the maladaptive response to stress. How do we actually come to favor that kind of thing? How does it become an addiction to us?
Well, I think it doesn't happen. Consciously, I would say it doesn't happen consciously. It happens, in my opinion, when we live a fast-paced kind of life, a life where maybe there's a lot of change or there might be some trauma sometimes. And so you're like often exposed to stressful situations and where your stress response would have been kicked in. So you were exposed often to these kind of like stressful situations. And over time, it just rewired your brain. So it's not something that you did purposefully or willingly. It just happened over time from either living a very fast-paced life, which when we live at a fast-paced life, we are triggering the stress response. We are excreting adrenaline and cortisol, which, you know, makes us a little bit agitated a little bit. And if we do that all the time, that reprograms the brain unwillingly towards the stress response instead of the relaxation response. So we have to actually train ourselves again towards the relaxation response, towards triggering the relaxation response, so that when you are faced with a stress in your life, and we will be faced with stress,
of course,
our brain goes towards the relaxation response rather than the stress response. It's kind of like you're making it think, making your brain think.
Yeah, and telling it that it doesn't have to be kind of like, you know, what tends to happen is that the, you know, the calm is unsettling for them, you know, like
waiting
for the next shoe to drop all the time. And it's like,
you
have to reprogram yourself to think, no, this is normal.
That's okay. Yeah. This is what you want, actually. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I guess I have another, because I just love the way that you've done all of this with the whole,
thank you.
In my, I, like we've called it both worlds, and just having that scientific foundation or that traditional foundation, and then moving to the more holistic. It's almost like once you've explained it the way you've explained it, you can't see treatment any other way. Like you can't even see
it
being holistic, right? Like
you just, right, I agree.
So I just wonder all that, like, you know, we say this stuff about the, like the traditional foundation, like we've talked about that and stuff, but then at the same time, I, like, we were in no way bashing holistic treatment, because that's exactly what you do, and that's exactly
what
I try to do, and it's, you know, it's what I believe in, what you believe in, what so many people believe in and have gone toward. It's like you can't see them apart anymore. You know, it's so weird.
They're complementary. They're very complementary. Yeah.
And it's just, I can't imagine, like, what were, have you ever thought, like, what your programs would look like if you had never gone down the holistic route?
No, not at all. I don't think I'd have programs.
Exactly. It's so weird. I always wonder those things. Like, what would happen if we didn't marry the two? Like, you know, it's just incredible. I love the way they work together. So I just wanted to make that, you know, just say that out loud, just in case we hadn't made that clear. But
We don't mean to offend anyone.
Of course not. I mean, it was literally just to talk about the fact that we personally went through, again, very differently, both you and I, but there is that background, and then that foundation, again, way more in your situation. You have a lot of the foundation, you know, the licensing and all of that stuff, and the years of experience. So that's different. But even so, you know, a lot of people will move from one to the other. And I definitely think it's good to combine them both. I think it was great. And even doctors who end up teaching yoga, who end up going into holistic medicine. I mean, you have those two.
I think once you know what holistic modalities can do, I think there's no turning back. Like once you sort of like see the evidence of it and how deeper the healing can be, there, you can't unknow that.
Exactly. You can't see it. You can't.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things is like if I had to lose one from my memory, I mean, I wouldn't want to lose any from my memory. Mm-hmm. If I had to lose one, I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to lose the impact that holistic health has had. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not that I'd ever have to make that choice. But
right. I don't want to lose either.
Like, I definitely don't want to lose either, but I think I could be okay if I just had the one.
Yes.
But definitely having both is important. And I think it also just makes more sense, right? Like if you're a person who's a bit more, weren't we talking about this before, like not in this show, but we were talking about the way we analyze things and the way things have to be understood in our minds. Mm-hmm. I feel like that to an extent also might explain why some of the foundations have been preferable to you, like to the way that you've studied and to the way that you offer your work. That could be as well. It could be the way your brain works, possibly.
Absolutely, right. And it's not right for everybody. It just did for me. And I feel very confident, I guess, having done it that way, for me, it's what brings me confidence in what I do, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you have that. So just to recap, there's the Happy Holistic Self-Care Project.
Yes.
That's the...
Then there's a Stress Less Joy Multiplier.
Perfect.
And then there's also a mini version of the Happy Holistic Self-Care course. And there's a masterclass on how to treat anxiety holistically. But to get to the mini course or the anxiety course, you have to go through the Stress Less Joy Multiplier.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love that. And you talked about self-care. I guess this would be like the last thing I want to, like the notes that we could leave on is self-care. You really talk a lot about self-care. And I know there's a lot of talk about self-care out there, but you really get into the nitty-gritty of self-care. So why don't you talk about
that? Sure. So to me, self-care is actually non-negotiable. It's something that all of us should be engaging in. And it's really not selfish. I've spent a lot of time retraining people how to think about self-care. A lot of, especially women, think that, oh my God, self-care is selfish. It's vain. It's like, I can't do that. People are going to think I'm selfish. And it's not selfish at all. It's your job. It's your first and primary job to take care of yourself, to look at your needs, your physical needs, your mental needs, your emotional needs, and your spiritual needs. We all have these needs. They don't go away. We have these needs, and it's our job to fulfill them for us to lead a healthy and kind of our most optimal life. And so self-care, or the kind of self-care that I talk about, which is holistic self-care, dives deep into looking at your needs and then how to fulfill your needs in all those four layers of life. So to me, self-care is way more than just, oh, I need to lose a few pounds, or I should put lotion on my skin. It goes to the four layers of life to really replenish that vital energy, to make sure that it's perpetually renewed and protected on a daily basis, but so that your needs are also met on a daily basis. So, and if you're curious, like people sometimes ask me, like, well, what do? I actually take about an hour a day of self-care.
Yeah.
And in that hour, I attend to my physical needs, emotional needs, mental needs, and spiritual needs. And it varies what it looks like from day to day. Some days I might be journaling my feelings about something. Some days I might be doing yoga. Other days I'm meditating. Other days I'm engaging in body care rituals that release my inner pharmacy, because we all have an inner pharmacy. And in Ayurveda, it teaches us how to do that.
How would you describe an inner pharmacy to people?
So the inner pharmacy is your body's ability to self-heal. Mm-hmm. So by touching your, it's going to sound weird, by touching yourself in certain ways, you can release different chemicals in your body to self-heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. The inner pharmacy, I like that. It's It's really good.
I don't mean sexual, although that is a need.
I was like, let's do it. Let's talk about it. No, that's fine. But that's brilliant. I love that. Inner pharmacy. And anyway, I'll be putting everything in the show notes from everything you've mentioned, or your programs and offerings. So they'll all be in the show notes, as well as your links. Sorry. And I guess
the YouTube channel, maybe?
Oh, everything will be there.
Everything?
Facebook, the Instagram programs, everything will be there. And obviously, one more thing. I'm sorry, I keep saying that, but
what
I'd love to ask actually is, with this whole COVID and this whole pandemic and stuff, what have you done most with your clients, and what's some advice that you can give to people that comes to mind?
I have reminded them of the importance of breathing, mm-hmm. because this is a stressful situation. Inadvertently, it can be easy to just breathe very shallowly, and when we breathe shallowly, like just from the chest, it triggers a stress response by triggering the upper respiratory receptors, kind of thing. So we inadvertently, just because we're breathing shallowly, it triggers that stress response. So I remind people to just breathe fully and deeply on the hour, every hour. Maybe like put an alarm on your phone just to remind yourself to check in with your breath. Because if you're breathing fully and deeply, you're already in a stressful situation with the pandemic, right? But breathing fully and deeply, it's going to feel less stressful a little bit.
Absolutely. I think at the end of the day, the breath is the most important thing you can come back to, right?
I agree. Yes, absolutely. We can't get around it.
Exactly. And I think it's given that, you correct me if I'm wrong, but that this is a respiratory.
Yes.
The irony is that you should spend as much time as possible trying to breathe. I think that's the most scary part of this whole thing, right? Like that's the...
Right. So breathing fully and deeply, like really taking deep belly breaths where your belly puffs out a little bit.
Yeah.
That's a full deep breath. But yeah. So that trains your diaphragm and your lungs. It just strengthens them and helps them be more also strong for this pandemic.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have any other pieces of advice? I feel like I just want you to come on the show every day.
I'd love to.
Show now. No, but it's really fun because it's all these different perspectives, and again, like, cannot stress enough how much I love how you've taken all, you know, how you just married everything together. I think it's so special. I think it's the best, you know. It's great.
Thank you. So necessary. That's very kind. Thank you so much.
It's just so necessary in the world, you know. I think it's not one over the other. It's just like the perfect unison of both, I think. And helping,
I agree.
Offering different modalities. I think it's, and you have so many tools in your toolbox at this point, you know, it's, there's so many ways to help people. I think it's great.
Right. There are options out there for folks. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any other advice for us or any other things that you want to say?
Let me think.
It doesn't have to be related to COVID. It can be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just a reminder to take care of yourself. If we don't take care of ourselves in a loving and nurturing kind of way, even in our thoughts, like we can be really mean in our thoughts towards ourselves. It's important on a daily basis to speak kindly to yourself and in a way be your best cheerleader. Excuse me. So look at that as well. Look at how you speak to yourself, be kind to yourself. It'll impact your relationships too. If you're not like criticizing yourself or judging yourself internally, but more speaking kindly to yourself, you're likely going to be that way outwardly as well. And it's going to improve your relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah. All right. Well, if people want to find you, where can they find you?
Let me see. They can find me on YouTube at Holistic Karen. Karen spelled K-A-R-I-N-E. They can find me. My first website is karenjohnston.life. Mm-hmm. Karen spelled K-A-R-I-N-E. And then my programs can be found at thehappyholisticmethod.vipmembervault.com. So that's a long one.
That's okay. They'll all be in the show notes, but there are places for people to find you, right?
Yes.
That's wonderful. So I'll put all those links in the show notes. If anything springs to mind, I'll add those as well. And obviously, if I get any questions, I'll try to throw those show notes into the notes.
Great.
As well.
Oh, great! Thank you.
I want to thank you very much, Jen.
Much.
I want to thank you so much, Karen. This was a wonderful interview. Very fun.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much, and please come back again.
I will, absolutely, anytime.
Thank you so much, and until next time, then.
Bye.
Bye.
So I hope that you enjoyed that episode with Karen. I've put all the information that you need to get in touch with her and to have some details about the episode in the show notes. As always, if you love the show, please give it a 5-star rating. You can also leave a review if you fancy, and it really just helps support the show. So thank you so much. It really goes a long way, so thank you so much for that. Until next week, namaste.